Hey there, welcome to Bible Talk. This is a podcast where we will read the Bible.
And then we're going to talk about it. It's a podcast for everyday people. And we have reached Matthew chapter 8.
We have indeed. Shall we start in verse 1?
Please.
Okay. When he came down from the mountainside, large crowds followed him. A man with leprosy came and knelt before him and said, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. "I am willing," he said. "Be clean." Immediately he was cured of his leprosy. Then Jesus said to him, "See that you don't tell anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and offer the gift Moses commanded as a testimony to them."
Wonderful. So now we're shifting into a different section of the book of Matthew. Jesus had spent chapters 5, 6, and 7
on a mountainside
mm-hmm. in one continual lesson or message. And it was so awesome. He comes off of the mountainside now, and he's back to, I guess, day-to-day life. And as he comes off of that mountainside, he didn't come down alone. In verse 1, it said, large crowds followed him. I mean, they liked what they heard. They were curious at the very least. They were converted, perhaps, at best. They were all in, and right. So they followed him. And amongst that crowd, there was a man with leprosy. Well, leprosy is a disease that affects the skin and literally can create circulatory issues that quite morbidly cause parts of your body to fall off.
It's crazy. It's like being a living zombie.
Mm-hmm. And so one of these men kneels before Jesus and says, "You can make me clean." Now, infectious skin diseases are
straight out of bounds.
Out of bounds, yeah. And transmitted. It's not a genetic thing. And so what people would do typically with lepers, and even into somewhat modern times have done with lepers, because there are still places where leprosy exists, is you quarantine leprous people, and you stay away from them, and you keep a distance. And so for this man to fall down at Jesus' feet and say, "I'm willing to be cleaned," or "I would like to be cleaned if you're willing," Jesus does something in verse 3 that is, maybe you miss it if you read too fast, but it's really quite...
It's scandalous.
Scandalously wonderful.
Yeah.
What does he do?
He touches him.
Reaches out and touches this leprous man.
Which, as a rabbi, which we know Jesus was, also knew, this is straight out of bounds because then it makes you unclean.
Yeah, it makes you unclean for a period of time.
Skin disease,
right? Yeah. Anyone who comes into contact. But he reaches out and he touches this man, and immediately he's cleansed of his leprosy. So this guy is, his life has been restored because he's been separated from friends, family, whoever, because of his leprosy.
Right.
He can now return to that life. Jesus has done more than just heal him physically. He's done things for him on an emotional and familial and relational level, which is fantastic and wonderful. And at the same time, did Jesus have to reach out and touch him to do this, or could he have spoken to the man and said, "Okay, I agree to heal you, you're healed"?
No, he's healed people's children from miles away.
Yeah, we're going to see that. We're going to see that as we go through this gospel. So he reaches out and touches in a situation where he doesn't have to reach out and touch, to a person who he's sort of forbidden to reach out and touch. Why do you think he did that?
I think that Jesus, by his life and also by his words, those matching up completely, is showing us what he calls us to, which is this scandalous love for people. Like dirty love is what I call it, where you're going to get your hands messy. You're going to get in there and it's going to cost you something. And going back to our previous podcasts, you know, in this series, in this season, you know, the idea of needing to protect ourselves and guard ourselves and put this in a bank and this in a vault.
Safety.
You know, we want safety, and it keeps us from dirty love in the way that Jesus is. So in my opinion, I feel like what Jesus is doing is he's showing us.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, he said you'll be able to tell that good prophet from that false prophet by their actions, by the right. fruits of their mm-hmm. tree. And so here's Jesus demonstrating good fruit,
right.
taking a risk he doesn't have to take because he loves and because right. he cares. So it's wonderful.
It is beautiful.
All right, verse 5.
When Jesus had entered Capernaum, a centurion came to him asking for help. "Lord," he said, "my servant lies at home paralyzed and is in terrible suffering." Jesus said to him, "I will go and heal him." The centurion replied, "Lord, I do not deserve to have you come under my roof, but just say the word and my servant will be healed. For I myself am a man under authority with soldiers under me. I tell this one, go, and he goes, and that one, come, and he comes. I say to my servant, do this, and he does it." When Jesus heard this, he was astonished and said to those following him, "I tell you the truth, I have not found anyone in Israel with such great faith. I say to you that many will come from the east and the west and will take their places at the feast with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven."
Important people.
"But the subjects of the kingdom will be thrown outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Then Jesus said to the centurion, "Go, it will be done just as you believed it would." And his servant was healed at that very hour.
So this is an example of exactly what we were just alluding to. And I don't think it's accidental that the story of the leper who he laid hands on
right.
and the story of this suffering servant who he didn't even go into his house
right.
to heal are back to back. I don't think it's coincidental. Mm-mm. It demonstrates, it underscores that what Jesus did in the case of the leper was intentional and it was amazing.
It was exactly what the leper needed.
Right, mm-hmm. because he can heal from this distance. Mm-hmm. What's so commendable here is that this man took Jesus at his word, period.
That's it.
That's it. He accepted his ability. He needed no further proof.
Mm-hmm.
He just said, if you say he's healed, he's healed. I get it. I have people that I command. And just the way I give orders and it happens, I believe that you can just give orders
right.
and this can happen. So you say it and it's done and I believe it. And Jesus says that is great faith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's intense. Like I was just even looking at like how Jesus recognized he had great faith and that I haven't found anyone in Israel. Here's this centurion.
Which is a
Gentile.
Roman. Probably a Roman.
Yeah. Right. And so you have this
Which
Gentile,
they were the bad guys.
The bad guys in the story
yeah.
right? Who are, you know, occupying their land, their culture, permeating in every aspect of their day-to-day life. And so clearly they are not the kingdom. They're not kingdom people. They're not the kingdom promise, right? But I find it significant that Jesus turns around to that large crowd, probably comprised mostly of the people of the kingdom. And when I say that, I mean Israel, right? Israel, as we've understood it up to this point in history, as we're reading. And so you look at what Jesus's words are, and he's like, look, there are going to be people that come from all races, all cultures, and they're going to enter the kingdom, but those who should have possessed the kingdom are now outside, and this descriptor gets me every time, where they'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And I think that the significance of, you know, Jesus and those back-to-back stories that you just said, the outcasts that were people of the kingdom, but they got a communicable disease or they fell into sin or whatever. They're the outcasts. And then you have those who just exist outside of Israel, Gentiles, being ushered into the kingdom. And so those two very dysfunctional, very, let's leave them in the dust because they're not Jacob's descendants, you know, I think is significant.
And why does that matter, or why should we pay attention to it now?
I think we should pay attention to it. For me, I feel like I need to pay attention to it because, number one, by my faith, it will be done for me. You know, how is my faith? What do I believe about what Jesus is capable of doing? But also understanding that I'm engrafted, you know.
Okay.
I'm a converted Gentile. I had absolutely no reason to exist in the kingdom.
No entitlement to it.
No entitlement to it whatsoever. And so the care that I need to live my life by and consume Jesus with is important.
How should it affect the way I see other people who aren't kingdom people yet?
The same compassion. I mean, I'm just like that story, the parable of you know, that Jesus tells about this man who had all of his debt forgiven and goes out and chokes somebody out.
Yeah, we'll get into that one in chapter 18.
Yeah. And so I have zero reason for entitlement. I don't come to the table.
So therefore, when I see someone else.
Oh, compassion and mercy and love.
I've been there.
Yeah.
I am that person.
Mm-hmm.
I know you because I am you.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we are you. Okay. All right. So let's go to verse 14. When Jesus came into Peter's house, he saw Peter's mother-in-law lying in bed with a fever. He touched her hand, and her fever left her. She got up. She began to wait on him. When evening came, many who were demon-possessed were brought to him, and he drove out the spirits with a word and healed all the sick. This was to fulfill what was spoken through the prophet Isaiah. He took up our infirmities and he bore our diseases. And this is in Isaiah 53, one of the great prophecies of Messiah that you'll find in the Old Testament. So here Jesus heals crowds,
right.
Mother-in-law, distant, suffering servant, and leper. So he spends the first 17 verses of this chapter healing people in various stages or states. Jesus was definitely active in meeting needs and being a healer.
Right.
Yeah?
Absolutely. And I love the right away that it's tying in the prophecy in Isaiah. And, you know, whenever I see things like this, I always think, what must it have been like for Jesus to stand up in a synagogue and read from the scroll of Isaiah?
And go, hey, that's me.
That's me. That's what I do.
Yeah.
You know, or just being reminded, this is why I'm here. Like this scroll and the things in it possessed the opportunity to be probably motivators for Jesus as he matured into his role. So it's just really cool.
Yeah. Want to pick it back up in verse 18?
I sure will. When Jesus saw the crowd around him, he gave orders to cross to the other side of the lake. Then a teacher of the law came to him and said, "Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go." Jesus replied, "Foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head." Another disciple said to him, "Lord, first let me go and bury my father." But Jesus told him, "Follow me and let the dead bury their own dead."
This is retold in Luke 9, I believe, verses 57 and mm-hmm. following. You know, sometimes I wonder if the size of crowds following Jesus had something to do with the lack of other things that there were going on. They didn't have cable television and, you know, major sporting events to go to, and they weren't,
right.
you know, they didn't have gym memberships and just all the different things that
different
can be
distractions.
A distraction. And so mm-hmm. there's this one teacher roaming the countryside, and he's healing people,
mm-hmm.
and he's preaching such profound and powerful words. And so just droves begin to follow him because nothing else to do. And this is amazing.
Right.
So this combination has all these people around Jesus and willing to follow. But Jesus wants it to be understood here that following him comes at a cost. It's not as
yes.
easy as just a mental, "Jesus, you're awesome." Because I think most everybody can get there. Jesus was awesome. But following Jesus is going to at times be uncomfortable. As he talks about here, says, hey, follow me, but you know how foxes have dens and birds have nests? Well, I have no place to lay my head.
Right.
So it's not going to be comfortable to follow Jesus at times. And another comes to him and says, hey, I'm in for following you, but I got some other things that I should handle first. I got to take care of first. So first let me go bury my father and then I'll follow you. Mm. And what this indicates is that following Jesus comes at the cost of convenience. It's not always going to time out well. It's not convenient to have convictions sometimes. It's not convenient to have priorities sometimes. Mm-hmm. And Jesus is just, he's not telling them they can't follow. He's just telling them the reality of what it is going to be when you follow. And I think in modern times, many of these things can still hold true. On verse 21 there, when it says, first, let me go bury my father. Mm. Does that sound like a terrible request?
In our day and age? No, I feel like, lay off, Jesus. Let me just do this thing, and then I'm with you.
Yeah, it's not first, let me go rob this bank.
No.
First, let me go bury my father. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, if we don't go digging a little bit and we just read it on the surface,
right?
It sounds like this guy's dad is just like laying dead somewhere.
It does, yeah.
And hasn't been buried yet. Like he's just laying on the couch or something and they haven't moved his body. In reality, that probably doesn't track and doesn't make sense.
Right.
It's not what they did culturally. They just leave dead bodies laying around. When he's talking about burying his father, he's talking about the process of bringing his father to rest.
Right.
Most likely, his father was even still alive at this time. His father was in diminished health. He was winding down in life. And to bury your father is to spend time being his caregiver, caretaker,
right,
and bringing him to an honorable end, and then finally going through the burial process and having the proper ceremonies and memorials. And then when that's all done, Jesus, I'll follow you. So, you know, timing-wise, it would have been easier after these things were done. But the calling to follow Jesus doesn't come to us only in moments where we've got nothing else going on.
Right.
And no, we're going to have to make, you know, priorities.
Yeah. And I love the verbiage in verse 21, excuse me, where the disciple says, first, let me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, and we talked a little bit about this earlier in Matthew about our possessions and things like that, but I would say the thing that stands out to me is like, what are our but first let me's? You know?
Yeah, we have them too.
We do. We absolutely do. The things before I can feel settled, before I can have true peace, before I can feel secure, before I can, you know, fill in the blank. But first let me. And I think our search for whatever that but first is, it will always be in opposition to following Jesus. It'll be attached to that cost.
That's true.
And I don't think we count the cost once. I think we count the cost.
No, it has to be
continually.
Has to be continual.
You know, if I'm going to follow Jesus, am I following Jesus at a standstill 50 miles away? Well, I mean, I can say that.
And we have to, because following Jesus today is a very different set of circumstances than following Jesus when I'm old.
Right.
Or when I have kids in the house versus when my kids are grown up and moved out of the house.
Fact.
I mean, it's just different.
New seasons.
Following
New
looks
seasons
different.
Always. And you are always having to count the cost of what, in this moment, if I continue to pursue, you know, the hem of Jesus's garment, to be as close to Jesus as I know I need to be, it's going to cost me something. And what is it? What are my but firsts?
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Thank you so much for joining us today, and we'd like to leave you with this reminder.
To not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves, but to do what it says.